Welcome to the Student Sessions, the unedited podcast for students and graduates that tells it like it is and addresses the issues that are important to you, today and every day. Brought to you by The Branding Man and hosted by Tonya Galati.
Hi, and welcome to the Student Sessions with me, Tonya. My guest today is Charlie Bull. Charlie is the Head of Higher Education Intelligence at Graduate Prospects, the UK sector agency charged with the support of higher education, careers and employability provision, where he is the specialist on UK graduate employment and the skilled jobs market. Charlie publishes and speaks extensively on all issues on the schools, graduate and postgraduate labour market and works extensively with quantitative data on graduates and students. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Tonya.
How are you doing?
Yeah, all right, quite busy.
You are the data whiz of education, so I can understand that you're probably very, very busy right now. So thanks for joining us on the Student Sessions.
Yes, for some reason, people seem to want to know about the graduate labour market right now.
Just before we start, explain to us which exotic part of the world you're in today.
I'm in a very exotic Peak District, so just on the edge of the Peak District. So I'm actually not very far from Sheffield.
Well, that is quite exotic.
Just a few hills in the way.
Yeah. Okay, so what I'd like us to do today is there's lots of information within the news around the labour market, what that's going to look like in terms of future employment opportunities for students. Just before we go into a bit more of a Q&A style discussion, Charlie, could you just explain to our listeners what your job with data involves?
Right, so I am, to cut a long story short, I am kind of the labour market specialist for the higher education sector bodies like Universities UK and the careers people who work within HE. So when careers professionals and employability professionals and all those kind of people are putting together their information, it's my job to do the basic research and to do all the data and insight that they then use to work with young people.
Okay.
And so I researched the labour market. I researched the job market for people post 18, and I've been doing that for quite a while. I know I sound tremendously young, but actually I'm knocking on a bit. Been doing this for nearly 20 years, so I've got a little bit of expertise behind me.
So you basically provide digestible insights for people like me who don't understand data to enable us to plan ahead and know what's coming up.
That's right. I mean, everything I do involves working with data, but what I try to do is kind of make the data invisible, if you like, so that what comes out is insight rather than a bunch of stats. And where stats are brought out, and where I do use stats. And I do, as you know, Tonya, I do use stats quite a bit. But at least I put in a digestible and relatable form, so you don't have to be a maths whiz to be able to understand what I'm trying to get across.
Okay. So the labour market is ever changing. So what we want to talk about is the fact that obviously we are in the middle of a global pandemic. Businesses are very much slowing down, if you like. So obviously that's going to have some consequences for the labour market in terms of student opportunities as we kind of move forward. So could you just give us a summary in terms of what you're finding, Charlie, around, if you like, the curse of COVID-19?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing to be very clear about, Tonya, and we've got to be honest, is that nobody's been in a situation like this before. So, you know, this is a thing that hasn't happened in the modern age. In the world, there were some SARS outbreaks that were largely contained, which hit South Korea, which is one of the reasons why parts of Asia have dealt with this relatively well, because they're quite used to it. But certainly in terms of Europe, US, we've never experienced anything like this before. And so some of the effects are, unknowable isn't quite the right word, but you know, they're beyond what our experience is. But that said, we've got relatively recent experience of a very severe economic downturn. And quite importantly, and this might sound, again, a slightly odd thing to say, but quite importantly, in careers and employability and in the employment market, we've got experience within living memory. And I was around for that. I was in this job for that kind of thing, of getting some of the initial reactions wrong to an economic downturn. Because quite candidly, in 2008, in the last recession, I know for many students, 16 to 18 year olds, that was, you know, when they were kids. But for us, it was when we were working. We overreacted. We expected the whole situation to be rather worse than it actually was. It was pretty bad, but certainly, I vividly remember a lot of the discourse around then was very much very, very downbeat. I'm very, very concerned. And the whole sector, employers overreacted, government overreacted, careers and employability professionals overreacted. And actually, businesses got to grips with it very quickly and reacted in a very pragmatic and sensible way, and one that preserved jobs. And the crucial thing to bear in mind here, Tonya, is that this pandemic is finite. It has a beginning and will have an end. In terms of there is likely to be a recession that then comes as a consequence of it. But the pandemic itself is likely to be relatively short in terms of economic events of this nature. And so when businesses recruit young people, they recruit them with two major aims in mind. The less important is to fill a job now, but the more important is to fill long-term needs and long-term, and you know, to create a supply chain of people who will carry the business forward for years to come. And so that first need to recruit people right now has receded, but that second need to create a supply chain of individuals who'll take the company forward is no less important, and in many ways is more important than it was 3 months ago. Everywhere, all around the world, and certainly in the UK, businesses are realising that when we come out the other side of this pandemic, things will be different. The business environment will be different. The way that they'll be working will be different. Customer bases will be different. The ways that people will earn money will be different. And it will require new and fresh thinking to make the most of that. And actually, a lot of them are very keen to preserve what recruitment they would ordinarily do, because they're aware that if they cut all recruitment right now, when the recovery comes around and they want to go back to business as usual, if they've cut their recruitment and people have left, they will not be in a position to capitalise on that. Okay. And so that long-term view is really, really important for businesses. And again, just to go back, I'm cracking on quite a bit, but I did graduate into a recession myself. I graduated into the recession of the early 90s. The reason why that recession, although it seems like a very long time ago, was important is because businesses reacted as a group in the wrong way in that recession, as they found out in hindsight. They cut all their graduate recruitment. It's one of the first things they did. They cut all of their young people, the recruitment of young people. And that was quite a long and quite a deep recession. And for young people, it was a particularly bad one because recruitment was cut so deeply. But then the mid-90s, when recovery came around, all of these businesses found that they had no one in place, no new talent in place to capitalise on a recovery. And so the recovery was a lot longer than it needed to be because businesses made that mistake. And so when future recessions came around, businesses didn't do that, because they learned from the 90s that cutting everybody, cutting all your intake, cutting all your hiring, just cripples you further down the line. And so we're reasonably confident that businesses are only going to cut hiring completely if they have absolutely no option. If essentially it's a choice between that and going bust. Otherwise, they are going to preserve recruitment because they will need people later on, and they'll need new people and new ideas.
Okay, so what are employers doing behind the scenes then? Because what I'm keen for us to do is to reassure our listeners, because there isn't a lot of information at the moment for them in terms of, you know, well, apparently people care about us, but actually no one seems to be doing anything. Can you shed a bit of light in terms of what is going on behind the scenes?
I mean, the other thing to bear in mind at the same time is employers are still actually largely in discussion mode for a lot of this work, because they are aware that things are going to be different, but they're not quite sure when, and they're not quite sure how. And so that's kind of shaping. So you can see in the press, there's a lot of calls. There's an awful lot of calls now for the government to start talking about an exit strategy from lockdown. And a lot of that is coming from business who need to plan for it. They need to be ready for it. They need to start up, you know, as soon as the lockdown is lifted, day one, they want to be getting back to business as usual, and that includes making sure they have the right people in place at the right time. At the moment, what they're kind of doing is they're preparing to prepare, if you like. They're getting all the ducks in a row so that when they find out when lockdown is going to be lifted, or when they get an idea of when lockdown is going to be lifted, they can have their recruitment efforts ready so that people are in place. And at the moment, what they're doing is they're switching a lot of their recruitment activity online. They're trying to send things like assessments online. They're trying to send recruitment methods online. But actually, the logjam at the moment, talking to businesses, is not that. It's actually, how do you onboard people? How do you get people into the company once they've joined? How do you do all the inductions? How do you actually introduce people to their teams? And into their working environment, and there's a general feeling that's a little harder to do, especially if you're sure that your future work is going to be largely virtual. And certainly a lot of teams and a lot of organisations and businesses will be doing a lot more work virtually than they did pre-pandemic. But post-pandemic, I think there's still a recognition that a lot of work will be done from offices with teams of people who are physically together. And it's very hard to do the inductions for that kind of process online. And that's where a lot of the thinking is currently going. Once people have cracked that and they can start getting back to a more visible recruitment presence, because it's all very well recruiting people, but if you can't then bring them into the company, then your recruitment effort is kind of slightly reduced. We also have to acknowledge that I'm talking here about big organisations as well. The smaller organisations are in survival mode. So when I said companies that will only stop recruitment if it's necessary to survive, unfortunately for a lot of smaller businesses, which make up the backbone of the economy, cutting recruitment is necessary to survival right now because they need every penny they can get. So we have to be candid and say that whole sector of the economy is in hibernation and is just trying to get by right now. And so you're not going to see the small business sector doing very much recruitment, if any at all. It's the larger businesses who are absolutely confident that they're still going to be here post-lockdown who are doing all of this work.
So obviously the larger corporates, they've got that infrastructure, haven't they, where they can kind of be a bit flexible with how they recruit. Obviously we are going to see the rise of virtual insight days and internships, because employers are still keen to provide opportunities for development. But we know that where, you know, we thrive on the personal touch, don't we? So I think the other part is they are focusing on making sure that these virtual experiences are still robust and they are still going to be useful experiences, rather than actually doing the opposite and actually, you know, knocking confidence, I suppose. Is that right? Is that fair?
Absolutely right. And the other thing to bear in mind is a very, very strong reputational effect. It actually happened in the last recession. Hardly anybody closed their graduate schemes, and the ones that did basically sent out a signal that they weren't strong enough to run a graduate training scheme, and got very hit very badly at a corporate level, and so businesses are really, really keen to signal that they're still recruiting, because to not be able to recruit is basically to say we're in real trouble. But you're right on that point about trying to make sure this is all a very positive experience. Businesses are really, really keen on positive work experiences. And actually what will probably be the case is, as more work becomes virtual, businesses will become more and more keen on making sure that experience is enjoyable, because a more virtual workforce is also a more mobile workforce. And if you, you know, if you don't have to travel to work, that takes away a barrier from going to work for a competitor. And businesses were already very concerned about retention in a lot of areas. One of the interesting things is, and one of the things that it's important to stress to your to the listeners, is actually we went into this process, we went into this pandemic with a lot of crucial graduate roles in quite short, a lot of crucial graduates, not roles, in quite short supply. So if you're techie, if you're very good at comms and marketing, if you are good in IT, if you're good in engineering, if you're a healthcare specialist, there are not enough of you to go around. And business is still worried about that kind of thing. I mean, obviously in healthcare, healthcare is a completely different kettle of fish. Health and social care, there are simply nowhere near enough people to fulfill the roles. But if you're, you know, if you've got IT skills, or if you're a good communicator or good at marketing, businesses are still very keen on you. And what's interesting as well is this very virtualized environment means that different comms skills, different ways of interacting with people will become more important. And businesses have traditionally actually struggled quite a bit at picking up new ways to interact with their users and their clients and their suppliers. And they've traditionally looked at younger employees and new hires to kind of help them out of that kind of issue. The new generation of students are seen as just being better at navigating this more online world than old fogies like me.
You're a bit harsh on yourself. So you mentioned obviously that smaller organisations are obviously in a bit of hibernation at the moment.
Yeah.
Corporate side, are there any sectors where we are likely to see growth? You know, I would assume in the technology sector, out of this there will emerge some new roles that, you know, we may not have seen before, and the need for cyber security obviously will increase because less people are
kind of right
in this environment. But kind of what do you see as the trends in terms of growth and decline in terms of sector opportunities?
Well, I mean, let's start with the obvious, healthcare.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking doctors and nurses here, although doctors and nurses, obviously, the fact that we went into this pandemic with a shortage of nurses and GPs has really, really hit. And the country simply can't afford that to happen again. We've got to bear in mind, fundamentally, and at root, we have to be clear that it will not be politically or economically acceptable for this to happen again.
Right.
And that will be a crucial underlying guiding principle of the way that the UK, in fact, every developed economy in the world reorganises its priorities post-pandemic. This can't happen again. We can't lock down whole economies for months. It just can't be done regularly.
Yeah.
This is going to take a decade to recover from. So it simply can't be done again. So that will massively reorganise. We will see huge recruitment efforts in healthcare, in social care, across any healthcare professionals. So we're talking doctors, nurses, radiologists, radiographers, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, all of these people, all of whom will be crucial to the effort of recovery from pandemic. Because, you know, if you're let's take a very obvious example. Boris Johnson got very sick from this disease. And the government has been very cagey about it. They're admitting he isn't working right now. He isn't doing any work right now. And medical professionals say it's going to take him weeks, if not months, to recover. And it's going to take the efforts of different forms of medical specialists. It will take occupational therapists who will help him get back to full strength. It will take physiotherapists, probably. It will take dietitians to make sure he gets on the right diet. And that's going to be the same for the large minority of people who have this disease seriously and survive. And there could be hundreds of thousands of those individuals who will be fit to work in a few months' time, as long as they get specialist care from professionals who are in short supply. So that whole area will mushroom. It will have to. Logistics, certain forms of logistics. And when we talk about logistics as careers and in terms of the labor and in terms of the jobs market, we tend to bundle two groups in together. Public transport is in a very interesting place right now because obviously its demand has dropped through the floor. But it's necessary infrastructure. We'll set that aside because the effects on that are probably going to be quite profound. We're probably going to end up with a slightly different transport network in normal ways. But the other forms of logistics, essentially that extremely complicated and hugely important supply chain that makes sure stuff gets into the shops. When people think about it, they think, oh yeah, that's all lorry drivers. And the lorry driving part of it is extremely important, but at the back of the back end of that is a very, very important, very, very complicated and highly graduate, highly skilled set of individuals and teams working on complex supply, IT, and coordination. And that's a highly specialised, highly skilled set of jobs. And again, we struggle to get people to do them. They're hugely important and they're going to become even more important. The third area, again, that's obvious, we're doing it right now, is it was always important, but if you're in IT and you know anything about networking, get ready to name your own price.
Really?
Because people with networking skills, people who can run networking programs, every business is going to want their own in-house. Even if they're not getting more virtual in general, one of the things that the pandemic has shown us is that there are a lot of things that we can do more efficiently through networks. General meetings, for example. So, you know, if you've got a project meeting, there's no need to get all your team into one place. The barriers are actually often things like, and you'll know this, Tonya, from your work in HE, the barriers are things like finding a place to have the meeting, booking a venue, booking a room. So the whole events, the whole business meeting and project management way that we do things is going to be revolutionised. And at the heart of that will be good quality networking professionals and networking programmes and solutions. So that will be the thing to get into if you're IT oriented. And of course, that will also, with that will come various other skills. So it will be, and a lot of people have noted, for example, the last 20 to 30 years in business has been a real boom for extroverts and people with a very extrovert personality because, you know, going in and working the room and doing that form of networking has been very important. But actually now, the near future might be much more suitable to introverts who don't have to do that kind of thing, who can be tremendously effective without being physically present. And so there are a lot of interesting and quite subtle differences in the way that we will do things. And businesses, as I say, businesses will look to young people to drive a lot of that, because a lot of us who have been doing the same things for a very long time will have to set aside old habits. And old habits do die hard. There's a reason that that phrase is so popular. Old habits do die hard. And they may be quite keen on getting people who's with a fresh mindset and a fresh point of view, who have not been doing things in a, you know, what will essentially be an obsolete way for 20, 30 years. That always happens in the jobs market when there's a downturn. Yes, opportunities for young people are diminished to an extent, but what also happens is you see a big replacement of older workers with young workers, particularly in fast moving sectors.
Right. And any sectors that you think over the next couple of years are going to be in decline?
So again, anything that relies on a lot of people being physically present. So hospitality industry is going to suffer a very severe downturn, we think, possibly structurally, various forms of entertainment. They'll be in demand, but it will be done in a very different way. So we know things like, you know, we know TV and film have obviously had a boom, but the production of that kind of thing will probably be done in a different way. Big venue events will probably be on a down. Some forms of business services, the events industry will probably change very rapidly. And that has been an important one for graduates. Some forms of sales, public transport isn't going to be great. It will be, yeah, so anything particularly that relies solely on physical face-to-face interaction. And then in the short to mid-short term, all those areas where small businesses are the crucial provider will be very badly hit. They won't evaporate, but they'll have to be rebuilt to an extent.
So are you saying...
Stuff like retail, lots of retail, for example.
So are you saying, Charlie, that I will have less things to watch on Netflix?
You'll have different things to watch on Netflix.
Right.
They'll be produced in a different way. They may be better. But I think you'll see a rise in, if you like, bedroom DIY programming. I think there'll be a rise in this sort of thing. I mean, obviously, there'll be a rise in your podcast specifically.
Of course, especially
general excellence.
Especially
but I think it strikes me that there will be an increasing niche for innovative sole providers who, you know, essentially bedroom DIY content providers. Just as in recession, traditionally it's been a boom for bedroom musicians. But I think with the rise in skill in video and networking, there'll be rise in collaborative bedroom video producers. Bedroom audio, you know, bands can actually get together and record virtually. And I think there will be for clever create. It's always for clever creatives.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of opportunities. What concerns me, of course, is how do you monetize them?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm mindful that you've got spreadsheets galore to get back to. So just before we say a fond farewell.
I love my spreadsheets.
What advice would you give to your younger self, Charlie? So if you were kind of 17, 18, thinking about the future and kind of where to invest your time or your education, kind of what advice would you give yourself?
That's a really good question, Tony, because, and it's particularly good because at that age, I made a whole bunch of really poor career choices.
Right.
So the first advice is 17, 18 is the best time to make poor career choices.
Yeah.
This is the grim bit, but it's got a nice ending. Is you've probably got at 17, you've probably got 50 years working life at least ahead of you for 50 years to recover from any mistakes that you make in your early career. So do bear in mind this is short and finite. It will probably have a profound effect on your career, but ultimately, if you struggle to get a job in the next few months, it's not going to render you unemployable for the rest of your life. It's really unpleasant. It's particularly horrible when you can't make rent or, you know, and the struggles are. But you've got years and years and years ahead of you. So don't get too downhearted. Don't get too downhearted if your so-called dream job fails to materialise right now, because most of us don't find our dream jobs for quite some time. Most of us have multiple jobs in our teens and 20s. Most people in professional careers don't settle down into an actual career until their 30s. So you've got years and years and years to decide what it is you actually want to do. A job that you really want to do may not be aware of it. You may not know what it's called. Don't be too fixated on what the job actually does, because it's at least as important to be doing it with people that you like and an organisation that has the values that you have, if not more so. And don't be afraid to try something that seems a little bit out there, because as I say, working with nice people at an organization that shares your values and outlooks can make up for an awful lot in the actual nature of the job. Whereas you can do what you think might be your dream, what you might be with your dream job, but if it's for a company that you don't get on with people you don't like, that job you'll not enjoy it. So do bear those things in mind. This will end. There will be a jobs market during and after it. And the likelihood is, for all young people listening to this podcast, the likelihood is you will, in time, make a decent career that will help you, that will make you pay your way. I can't promise it, but that is the likelihood. The more proactive you are and the more realistic you are about your options and the more flexible you are about what you're taking, that doesn't mean, you know, work for peanuts in a job that you hate for people you don't like. In fact, life's too short to do that unless you're absolutely forced to. But it does mean take care of what you're choosing to an extent, but don't be too fixated on getting the absolute perfect dream job that hits every single one but of all of the things that you want. Just try to get a job that looks like one that you're willing to get out of bed for, with a group of people that you don't mind seeing every day, and for a company that you think is not going to treat you too badly. That might sound quite equivocal, but actually, you know, that's not a bad set of goals. That's quite a realistic set of goals. Fundamentally, even those of us who love our job, and I love my job, would probably rather be doing something else with our days. So, you know, don't expect to go in and thinking there's a job there that I'm going to want to do for the next 50 years and it'll be an absolute pleasure and I'll do it even if I got paid for it. That's not how life works. So just be realistic, be flexible, don't get too downhearted. We're all in the same boat. And businesses are not this kind of soulless, blood-sucking group of individuals who just want to exploit you for your money. And they have good pragmatic reasons for wanting you to like them and to be nice to them. And they're just as worried as you are. So do bear that in mind.
And there's also lots of individuals and services available to help you and to support you. So do...
There are a whole bunch of people who really who have your back and are really, really keen to help.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the heartening things about this whole process is a lot of people are really stepping up.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who are really, really working their socks off to try and help young people make the best of it. And don't be afraid to look around and ask for help.
And do reach out to your schools, your colleges, your universities. They all have support in place for you. So do make sure you make the most of that.
They are all desperate to help you if they can.
But Charlie, I'm going to have to let you go, although I could sit and listen to you talk about data all day.
Yes, I certainly could.
Thanks.
Whether your listeners would have the stomach to listen to it all day, very different now.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Student Sessions, Charlie. And to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's episode and you found it useful. Hopefully that's helped to clarify a few things in your mind. And do join us again on the Student Sessions.
Thanks, Tonya. Stay cheerful and stay safe, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Student Sessions, brought to you by The Branding Man and hosted by Tonya Galati. Never miss an episode by subscribing. And if you liked what you heard today, then why not leave a review? We'll see you at the next session.